Hipsters, beatniks, hepcats. Whatever you like to call them, they abound in cities like Seattle. You know the types. They're the folks who hang out in bars and cafes wearing complicated glasses and facial hair, talking about art and politics and, you know, the meaning of life. Well, it may seem like hipsters have been around forever, but according to writer Justin Martin, America's first bohemian scene dates back to the mid-19th century. They gathered at a literal underground bar called Pfaff's in New York City. At the center of this band of American hepcats, poet Walt Whitman. Justin Martin chronicles this scene in his book Rebel Souls. Martin explained to KUOW's Marcy Silman that it was the bar owner, Henry Clapp, who carved out an American bohemia.
Well, there have always been bohemians throughout history, people that are kind of living on the margins, open-minded, shirking convention. But Clapp's great innovation was he took that Parisian model and he created, literally created a bohemian salon, a group of people that were self-consciously kind of emulating that style. And he was the one who kind of brought the term bohemian. So he imported both the term and the concept to the United States.
Let's talk just a second about that term bohemian, because there was an actual place called Bohemia in Europe. How does that connect to what we think of as the bohemian lifestyle?
It's funny. The only way it connects is during the 1840s, French society was a little bit like America in the 1960s. It was kind of under siege, a lot of strife in society. And there were gypsies in Paris, and gypsies had actually, as people know today, they hailed from ancient India and had made their way into the European continent. But Parisian, sort of upper crust Parisians, the bourgeois, for lack of a better term, they thought that these gypsies came from Bohemia, this kind of mystical Eastern European kingdom. So they started calling gypsies Bohemians, incorrectly, but they were pretty indiscriminate. They also started calling artists Bohemians, kind of unconventional artists, scruffy students, and so forth. Well, the artists and scruffy students who got called bohemians, they kind of appropriated the term. It was meant as a negative, but they started taking it as a positive, and they became kind of, you had your bohemians and you had your bourgeois. So they kind of embraced and embodied this term. And then when Henry Clapp, this American temperance lecturer, made his way to Paris, he was exposed to what was by then a full-fledged concept of sort of what a bohemian was and what a bohemian stood for.
So Henry spent a few years in Paris. He was taken with this. He also stopped being a teetotaler. He came back, decided he was going to recreate this at Pfaff. So how do you gather aspiring bohemians in New York City when there is no center and really people don't identify that way?
Well, Clapp had two massive advantages. His first advantage was he was a journalist by trade, so he knew a lot of people who kind of were bohemian in style, even if they didn't call themselves that yet. So he was able to invite them into this circle. Then he couldn't have picked a better bar, a better saloon than Pfaff's in terms of its location. This was an era when there was very little entertainment and even less nighttime entertainment in America, and people just kind of wandered around looking for things to do. And Broadway was the great strolling street. I mean, that was entertainment to walk up and down Broadway and, you know, look at shop windows, maybe go into a bookstore or a curiosity shop, or go into a saloon. And of course, people gravitate towards the saloons where they fit. And Pfaff's, you entered Pfaff's and you immediately looked around and you saw, you know, various types of bohemian sort of outlandish looking people. And so Clapp was able also to just kind of, I almost think of it like a drain catcher. These people to sort of make their way into the subterranean saloon, and Clapp would be waiting there at his long table that was set up for him. It seated 30 people, and certain people who might look interesting, they might take a seat and sit down there, or he might invite them. And pretty soon his circle began to build, and it began to build a reputation. Of course, then people started to seek out Pfaff's and actually try to make the cut and become part of Clapp's 30-person table.
to make the in crowd. Well, your subtitle of your book, Rebel Souls, is Walt Whitman and the New American Bohemian. So how did Walt Whitman, a poet that most listeners are familiar with through school, how did he fit into this scene?
He fit into it beautifully from the standpoint that he was truly a bohemian, although he wouldn't have called himself that when he first wandered into Pfaff's. You know, he was a gay, penniless poet living at home in Brooklyn in middle age with his mother and his siblings in a crowded apartment. I mean, you couldn't pick a person who was more of a bohemian. He'd had an initial two editions of Leaves of Grass, which were mostly met with silence. But when it wasn't silence they were met with, it was, you know, people's shock at how, in people's estimation, how immoral and lurid some of the passages were. And so he was perfect. And in fact, when he found his way to Clapp's table, Clapp was thrilled because Whitman had some small reputation at that point, where many of the people in this bohemian salon were complete unknowns. Whitman had a small reputation. And Henry Clapp recognized him immediately as someone who is a genius, someone who had a small reputation, but possibly somebody who, if he became kind of the linchpin of this salon, could really bring a lot of glory to Clapp and his group of bohemians.
Well, Clapp actually was also one of the key promoters of Walt Whitman, as I understand it from your book.
He was. Clapp was just tireless in his promotion of Whitman. Whitman brought out the third edition, really the landmark, the massively expanded edition of Leaves of Grass, while he was a denizen of Pfaff's Saloon. The collection of poetry really showed the influence of spending time hanging out in the bohemian circle. And then Clapp, in turn, turned around and he promoted Whitman in just indefatigably. I mean, I should mention, Clapp had a journal called the Saturday Press. And once his bohemian circle started kind of take off, the Saturday Press became one of the most influential publications in America, really right up there with, say, the Atlantic Monthly. And it was had a lot of readers. And so Clapp made a point of he just filled the Saturday Press with reviews of – he had three separate reviews of Leaves of Grass. He had essays on Whitman, gossip about Whitman, parodies of Whitman, appreciations of Whitman created by himself and other people in this bohemian circle. So he worked very hard to promote Whitman, and he had a ready platform in which to do it.
You know, we think of Walt Whitman in 2014 as an American icon. He is somebody we study in school. He's somebody that – presidents read at inaugurals. What do you think your book adds to the way we might view this man?
I think an important thing is to sort of go back to a really formative time for Whitman. And Whitman is really well understood as a bohemian. I mean, there's sort of two different images of Whitman. And one is what you might call the good gray poet. And that's a very kind of comfortable image. That's him as an older man, kind of caught in amber, up there in the pantheon with Dante and Homer, and there's something almost, he's reverend and serious and somber and in some ways safe as the good gray poet. But there's another Whitman who's a critical, and that's the bohemian Whitman, and that's very much who he was. I mean, he was also someone, at least in his time, who wrote what were then very shocking poems about romance between men, about the dangers of disunion on the eve of the Civil War. These were, and also he was the pioneer of free verse, which was really coming from orderly meter and rhyme. It was very radical at the time. So he was a radical bohemian poet. And that's an important – that was before he was famous, and that's kind of an important way to view him or understand him.
So Justin Martin, to go back to Pfaff's and the circle at Pfaff's, how did this place and Henry Clapp change the way that America thinks about artists?
Well, the circle of bohemians at Pfaff's, they really – they were part of a movement. They're sort of at the forefront of a movement that was moving away from, say, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. Just his name tells you he was kind of formal and stiff, and his art was very genteel. And this was at a moment in American culture, right on the eve of the Civil War, when there was a movement, kind of a counterculture, a movement towards art being provocative, challenging, controversial. And so that Pfaff circle that Whitman was part of was very much on the forefront of this movement towards art being a kind of a more soul-deep enterprise.
That's Justin Martin, author of Rebel Souls, Walt Whitman and America's First Bohemians. He spoke with KUOW's Marcy Silman. And by the way, if you'd like to visit Pfaff's in Manhattan, tough luck. It's gone, replaced by a shoe store. This is The Record from KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds.